Hi, I'm Josh Schlossberg, host of the Green Root Podcast, the official podcast of Eco Integrity Alliance, eco-integrityalliance.org, where we're on a quest to uncover the roots of the modern ecological crisis. This episode, we've got Matt Peters. Matt Peters is a member of the Heartwood Coordinating Council and is organizing this year's Heartwood Forest Council event in Southeast Ohio from May 24th to 27th. He lives in Pittsburgh, where he's been active with the neighboring neighborhood community gardens and with helping protect the city's urban forests in the Mon River Valley. Welcome to the Green Root Podcast, Matt.
Thank you, Josh. Hello. Good to be here. Glad to be on the show.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have you, Matt. And I've been talking for a little while about stuff, and Matt is in the forest right now. So before we get into anything else, how about you tell us about where you are, where you're living, what's going on out there?
Oh, glad to. My goodness, it's what a day. This is early February, and it was just such a nice day. I thought it would be great to come outside. And so I'm standing in my backyard. I'm about 100 yards from my house, and I'm in the Hazelwood Greenway. Hazelwood is a neighborhood in Pittsburgh where, you know, the steel industry once reigned. It was where the mills were, and surrounding it is hundreds of acres of forest just on this side of the river. And on the other side of the river, I'm going to point my camera the other way there, and there we are looking down on Hazelwood itself, the neighborhood. You can see the houses and the Mr. Rogers and all, and across the river is called Hayes Woods. And that is the city's newest park. It's a huge, that park property alone is 600, estimates vary, but almost 700 acres. Combined on both sides of the river, I'm standing right in the middle of 5,000 acres of contiguous urban forest. Just a huge green space in Pittsburgh. And Hazelwood, you know, is booming. You know, after 40 years of abandonment by the steel industry, Hazelwood is starting to rebuild, and you know, companies are beginning to reinvest. There's a whole digital and robotics revolution going on. It's really a fascinating place to live. You know, there's just, like every city, it's got a little bit of everything for everybody. So,
excellent. Thank you for showing us that. That's exciting. Yeah, I don't know much about that particular part of the country per se. And you think of industrial steel, you definitely don't think of all of those forests. So that's great.
Yeah. I call it the hole in the donut. That hill across the river, and even where I'm standing, there were mines just burrowed right into the hillside. And at this layer, they dug out the coal, and right below it, they dug out the limestone, and below that was the iron, and it was all right here, and that's why Pittsburgh is here. They just literally slid it on a ramp down to the riverside and loaded it on a barge and moved it up and down the river to wherever it needed to go. You know, they had the coke mills over there. They had the rolling mills here. They had the finishing, you know, the manufacturing different things was another part of the, you know, it was like this gigantic landscape scale assembly line that was the American Industrial Revolution, the steel industry, you know, Andrew Carnegie all the way up to World War II, all the way up to 1984 when they packed up and moved, left this neighborhood high and dry. So it is a fascinating time to be here. I've been a resident of Hazelwood now about 12 years, and watched the 1,100 acre Superfund site where the mills used to be. It looked like a big meadow. You could mow it for hay. I actually thought about growing straw and building straw bale houses. Now there's a housing revolution for you, right? Now that is, there's a lot of Department of Defense robotics going in there. You know, Uber, the famous company Uber, actually, if I reverse the camera again, I don't know if you can see through the trees, that's Uber's proving grounds. That's their research and development zone. They've got about 7 or 8 acres. They've built like a mock city, and they test robotic cars. And you turn just down, if you see through the trees, there's the downtown skyline. That's the point. That's the Three Rivers, where the Allegheny meets the Monongahela and becomes the mighty Ohio.
Excellent. That's super cool. Yeah, so the Green Route podcast has become a bit too West-centric, probably because I live out in Colorado now, but I'm from the East. Yeah. I'm from New York State. I lived in Vermont for probably half of my life, so I'm glad we're representing some of what's going on out there. So what's the forest like there? What are the tree species, oak and maple, or what's the deal out there? No.
Well, I'm at the northern tip where to begin with that one? The eastern hardwood forest is, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. I'm in Appalachia. So this forest in its natural state, yes, would be oaks, maples, 120 co-dominant species in the canopy. Out west, what is it, 5 or 6, you know, spruce fir, you know, a very different ecosystem. But here where I'm standing at the moment, I'm surrounded by a very young forest. I can show you photos from the 50s, probably up to the 70s, where these hills were absolutely bare. There were no trees because of the pollution. And it has sprouted up in a pretty robust canopy of black cherry and black locust. A little bit of honey locust. They're very spiny. Oh my gosh, let me show you this tree. Look how, I don't know if you can see that one in the background. There's these very spiny locust trees. And they're fixing nitrogen, you know, like a gigantic bean. Here's a real nice big relic cherry that got really big. It looks like a stump sprout. So that organism, you know, could be centuries old, even though these trees are as fat as they are at best, 80 years, you know. But most of the trees you can see are small. You can see there's virtually no understory. That's a problem with the deer as much as invasive species. This was, when I moved here, this was honeysuckle bush. Korean bush honeysuckle dominated the understory. And I dug that out. It took me a couple years, you know. There's a pile of it in the background over there. But I unleashed the next wave of invasive species, and that is this Japanese stilt grass. And you can see it. It's like a golden colored or light colored straw on the ground. And that is Japanese stilt grass. And we're going to get into a conversation, I think, about forests and fire. But, you know, some of the really devastating wildfires out west, one of the factors driving those is this invasive grass that could catch and light very easily. Eastern forests are different, you know. Western climate is drier, and these forests out here, you know, are designed more to hold water and store water and cycle water. So I'm hoping, because there's my house right down there, you know, I think I've gotten off topic. What was the question again, Josh?
Oh, no, you're just telling me about the forest there and the invasives. That is a crucial issue. Of course, the plants are different. So I wasn't even aware of the honeysuckle stuff. I wasn't aware of the stilt grass, but it sounds like you're managing that pretty well and letting the forest recover as best it can. So that's really great.
Just a few years ago, just recently, Hazelwood's Forests won an award, won an international recognition for the, you remember the UN Climate Conference in Glasgow, Scotland. As it happened, Hazelwood Initiative, the organization here, a citizens advocacy sort of membership group, a young woman named Tiffany had started a project with goats and had brought together Tree Pittsburgh, which is a really big organization here in the city that they do a lot of they work with the city on every on all the urban forest issues, everything from street trees to all these greenways. And another group called Land Force, which is training young people to I'm going to misrepresent their mission, but something like jobs in the outdoors. You know, they do a lot of building of trails. They spent summers here doing the same thing, clearing back the bush honeysuckle up on the ridgetop, starting with some areas that were really badly dominated, that the forest has completely failed to regenerate because the invasives have such a foothold. And through rotating goats, through rotating mechanical controls like scything it down or mowing it down. And then they covered the area with a really tightly spaced tree planting. Planted 6 or 8 foot saplings on a 6 foot spacing, a very dense and the idea was that these trees would grow quickly, shade out one of the most troublesome invasive plants there is, and that's the Japanese knotweed. That just owns acres of our forests out here. So they really tackled that head on. The international, you know, we got recognized and placed among the dozen finalists for the work that we're doing in our forests to make sure that they're healthy and in a good position to absorb carbon and mitigate climate change.
That's so awesome. Well, that's great to hear, and congratulations on that. Yeah, see, like when you hear forest management, you think, oh, timber industry going in there and cutting out all the trees, that's what they call management. No, but you're actually doing the real stuff. You're dealing with the invasives. And of course, we all know that the logging is what brings in invasives, or at least one of the things that does. So that's great. That's really great. And thanks for showing us around and explaining some of that history.
It's a great place to live. There's some wonderful people here doing really great work.
Super cool. Well, speaking of great work, why don't you tell us a little bit about your role in Heartwood, what Heartwood's all about, what sort of work you've been doing in history?
Heartwood, yeah. So Heartwood is people helping people protect the places they love. It started in, it was born on a winter night in 1990. Friends around the kitchen table, you know, and conceived of the need for a grassroots network of people who lived in and near national forests in America's heartland, Southern Indiana, Southern Illinois, and really Western Kentucky is what's right below there, land between the lakes. And they recognized that no matter what state you're living in, we're all dealing with the same U.S. Forest Service that is mismanaging our forests. You know, that is, the Department of Agriculture. You know, they're providing timber for the timber industry. You know, prior over other management values, recreation, habitat, carbon sequestration, you name it, and. So that's how Heartwood began, is that network. It has grown over the years to include a network of not just people focused on national forests, but people on our national energy policy, which is has some of the biggest impacts on our forests, whether it's mountaintop removal, coal mining, whether it's the fracking boom that has not only gobbled up national forest lands for pipelines, but also America's farmland. You know, farmers are selling out and moving out, so we're losing these valuable earth resources to a short-sighted fossil fuel industry that is killing the planet. What was the question again?
Whatever you want to say about Heartwood. Yeah, I mean,
Heartwood.
That's pretty good.
So Heartwood meets
around there. Yeah,
you got me going. This is fun. So Heartwood meets once a year. I'm sorry. Heartwood meets twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. We meet every year in May over the Memorial Day weekend at the end of the month, and we meet in a different place in the region. Last year, we were in central Indiana at a church camp, This year we're coming to Southeast Ohio, where we're going to be at the headquarters of the United Plant Savers in Meigs County. It's a nearby little town is Rutland, Ohio. And the United Plant Savers, this is really great. They have, I don't know how many acres. It's more than 300 acres. They might own 600 acres of land, and 300 is part of a sanctuary, you know, a designated sanctuary for medicinal understory plants. Appalachia is the source of the world's best ginseng. And that ginseng is valuable in traditional Chinese medicine. Part of the value of ginseng comes from the wild character of the root, the life that it lived in a natural forest. And that's part of the qi of the medicine. And Appalachia has that in a way that China, which is also a place in the world where ginseng is naturally found, does not, simply because their civilization is 5,000 years old and ours is 250. Pick your, you know, less than 500 years of colonization, right? So very different expressions in the plant for those who are tuned into that, you know. So that is part of the dynamic there. That's part of the work that they do. You know, they feature the medicinal herbs, research and advocacy for their restoration, opportunities for private landowners. And they may also have insights for ways that our national forests could be managed. Wouldn't it be interesting to, I've talked about this for our urban forests, you know, Pittsburgh, when the steel industry collapsed, rebuilt itself on, they call it meds and eds, education and hospitals, universities and hospitals. And what if we partnered with these medical institutions to research the medical properties of golden seal, cure for the common COVID, whatever, you know, something in the natural environment that is good for what ails us, whatever it may be. Thousands of native plants in the Appalachian region, you know, many of which have traditional and modern medical applications. This place is amazing.
That's cool. Yeah. And obviously Appalachia has a rich cultural and natural history, and obviously, a lot of the forests were cut in the past, but they're regenerating, they're recovering. They're starting to become, if not officially old growth yet, mature and soon, right? I mean, if old growth, it's a random definition, but say that starts at 80, 100, 120. I mean, we're getting on that pretty soon, right?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, we're in the middle of a process where the Biden administration is taking action to protect old growth and mature forests. I think the comment period just closed a few days ago, and that's, there will be another opportunity, I believe, this summer for the public to get involved with, you know, speaking out to protect old and mature forests on public land. And I think that's a really important question. Let's go back to Kentucky and land between the lakes. Here's a huge area of very old forest that recently had a tornado, natural process, right? And this forest is now, you know, there are large areas that were blown down by this tornado. If the Forest Service would leave them alone, which they are not, they're going in and logging that area under the guise of emergency salvage. But had they left that material on the ground, let the ecosystem continue through its natural process. And that raises, I raise this up to say, well, an old growth forest doesn't necessarily mean trees older than George Washington, you know. We have to recognize that protecting forests of any age is essential to our survival as a civilization. We have got to bring carbon down, and this is the only thing that works. Everything else is an investment experiment.
Got it. No, that's very well said. Very well said.
Yeah. And so that addresses, you know, when you talk about mature forests and future old growth, I mean, every forest is future old growth, right? So where do you draw those lines? And those are political lines, and those are going to be market forces. You know, this is the invisible hand of the market is what's going to draw those lines unless
it's pretty arbitrary. Yeah, out here in Colorado, where I was pushing against this quote wildfire fuel reduction logging that's not backed in science or common sense, and they were actually cutting some of the largest trees, which, you know, out here in parts of Colorado, 100-something, well, I counted this 129-year-old tree, which is pretty thick. Colorado, they don't grow really fat because of the, you know, it's harsher climate up higher and it's dry, et cetera, and, you know, cold, hard winters. But they were debating the local, the county open space about the age of old growth. And then they even went so far as to say, well, you know, really, comparatively speaking, you know, the oldest, if they can grow up to, you know, 400 years old. So it's not really old growth. It's like they're just making stuff up. So yeah, maybe we shouldn't play into their game as much. And whatever the age of the forest is, it's irrelevant. And I think what the problem with a lot of the management is, of course, is that they get in there and they never leave. So if they're only going to be protecting the older forests, they're just going to commandeer all the other ones. So they're managed forever. And that's part of the ploy. Yeah.
The rest become sacrifice zones and never have a chance to become a forest again. Or,
well, that's what I appreciate about Hardwood. Hardwood has been a staunch supporter of genuine forest protection for decades. When I first started in mid 2000s, 2005 or something like that, I was aware of you know, the work that folks were doing, and the staunch advocacy is really lacking. There are definitely some great folks in the environmental and forest protection movement, but it's the minority that are really holding the line. And so Hardwood has been doing that, and so many of the folks who are working on this are out west, so it's super important to have people in the heartland, east coast, eastern area, Appalachia, working on this stuff. So yeah, we can't thank you enough. But this, so the Hardwood Forest Council, so this one is May 24th to 27th in Ohio. I'm looking at the tentative brochure, but what generally goes on there? And then maybe I'll point out a couple of things on the brochure maybe you could speak to. But what happens at a Hardwood Forest Council?
Good. This event is a time for the movement to get together and just talk about our visions, talk about our struggles, talk about the strategies and what we're going to do next. This is the time when, you know, and the structure of these events follows a fairly, well, follows a pattern. You know, every Friday, it begins on a Friday opening. We have some kind of welcome to the place, you know, here's where we are. Might be a biologist talking about, you know, the native fish found in the creeks or something unique about that place. Southeast Ohio, there's going to be a lot to talk about. And then there's a band. Yeah, our events are fun. You know, we're activists who work hard all year, and we get together and we want to have a good time, you know. So we get together, we learn something about the place, we dance upon it, right? Saturday morning, we have our traditional morning circle. Everybody sits in a great big circle. Hello, where are you from? Quick, what are you working on? And everybody gets a chance to meet everybody else and say, aha, you know, they're working on something I've been thinking about or whatever. We break for lunch. The food at Hardwood is a very important part of the experience. You know, we serve the most climate-friendly, bio-representative food that feeds the soul as well as the body, you know. So after lunch, we usually have the breakout workshops. In the spring, we have a little bit more of a formalized structure. You know, we have some speakers and facilitators, but really it's a time for you to connect with those folks. Aha, you know, that person across the circle who is working on the same thing, you all need to sit down and talk about your stuff. So we'll have some workshop sessions in the afternoon. Saturday evening, we usually have our featured keynote speaker. Now, Western forest enthusiasts, I think, will be very interested to know that our keynote speaker is Dr. Chad Hansen, of the founder of the John Muir Project of the Earth Island Institute, one of the premier scientists in the field of forest ecology and particularly fire, you know, which is becoming a big issue. It's they talk about it on the weather, on the evening news. You know, it's a part of our lives, no matter where you live. And this is, again, you know, the use and the misuse of ecological management terms and even techniques by these federal agencies. You know, are they doing more damage than good? There's a budget-driven incentive to apply the same expensive, high-risk, you know, management, firefighting and fire using, you know, what's the word? Prescribed fire. You know, it's good for their budgets. Congress loves to fund these things, so that is really what's driving the forest management discussion at the agency level, and we need to get together and talk about how to effectively counter that. So this is a very important opportunity, and I love that we're also having this at the United Plant Savers, where we can really also dig into the ecology of the understory, because we spend a lot of time on the tree trunk. So this is just going to be a really great weekend.
That's super cool. And yeah, so would you say that there's a theme this year around wildfire as a way to kind of bring together parts of the movement?
Absolutely. This this use of fire, you know, really speaks to a very important part of the environmental movement, which is reconnecting and repairing relationships with indigenous peoples, who science is now telling us, well, you know, the native cultures used fire, you know, so we can too. So is this valid? Is this cultural misrepresentation, misappropriation? You know, these are deep issues. These are important issues. So I want this weekend to be an opportunity for some of that, a place where that can take place. Fire, of course, the theme of fire. We're meeting in Southeast Ohio. This is coal country. This is the place where they're now fracking for gas. You know, the Ohio legislature just allowed fracking under state parks. So, you know, these companies are coming for our public lands. They're using it to burn the planet and continue, you know, drive, make climate change worse. So fire is very much a theme of the whole conversation. It's a time for all these movements to come together and work together.
That's super cool. Yeah. Well, the issue of wildfire, of course, is not just and fire in general is not just a Western thing. And I predict that if they keep getting away with all the logging they're doing out here in the West, you all are going to see a lot more of it on the East. And in fact, I've already seen it proposed in places like New Jersey that they have to log because of possible fire stuff. So it's coming. We're the proving grounds out here, but it's coming for you all. And that's really cool that you're also, you know, we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the fracking stuff, all the stuff that's going on public lands and, you know, private forests, all that matters. I'm looking at the program right now. I just mentioned a couple of things. This is a tentative program, so it may or may not, but I see talking about American chestnut fiasco, concerns with keeping genetically engineered trees out of the forest. That's an interesting topic, huh?
That's a big one. The Global Justice Ecology Project has had a campaign for many years battling, you know, to keep genetic modifications and you know, doing field plantings, you know, planting 100 acres as an experiment. So there's some, they've got some exciting news. I guess I'll let them talk more about that. Let's cut it earlier.
No, but that's a good teaser though. So a little bit about urban forests here, that also there's a mention of the Stop Cop City folks down in, I believe that's in Georgia area.
Atlanta, and, Georgia.
Right. And so that's a historically Black community. It's also, there's an urban forest there. And so the police want to build a large sort of militarized training area. And this, it's not gotten as much attention as the previous elements of the Black Lives Matter movement, but that's still going on. And there, you know, there's been some strange stuff been going on there, but that'll be interesting to hear about some of that urban forest. That's kind of where a civil rights issue or social justice issue meets an environmental issue. So that's really important.
It's really important. The militarization of our police is such a problem on its own. And of course, this this flashpoint where the militarization of our civil society is directly conflicting with ecological, you know, they're clearing hundreds of acres of forest, and they shot a protester in order during a raid just a year ago, right at the end of January. A young fellow named Tortuguita, I think that's probably the first time I've said his name out loud, but you know, his body was riddled by 57 bullets. Obviously, our police need a completely different line of training, if that's what they're trained to do, to respond to a kid sitting on the ground with his hands up, you know, cross-legged on the ground. And obviously, these police need training in conflict resolution, in de-escalation, in being decent human beings, whatever. So, you know, something is really deeply wrong. And it is really important, just like dealing with climate change itself, many different movements are going to have to come together in order to address this crisis issue as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that does sound like that's an intersection of a lot of important topics. So that's cool that that's on the agenda. I also see things like, all right, people, maybe they don't care about trees. All right, well, there's stuff, plastics campaign, there's stuff about hemp, there's stuff about state politics with ballot initiatives, citizen democracy. So I see a bird walk, I see yoga, I see growing medicinal herbs. So yeah, even if forest stuff isn't your thing as much, it seems like you got stuff across the board, handcraft skills, archery, really cool stuff.
That's the brainstorm list for sure. We are hoping to have some artists come and do some, you know, how to make cordage, how to make, you know, you mentioned hemp and the plastics industry. Southeast Ohio and the upper Ohio River Valley is now targeted by, yet, you know, by plastics. This is the second step. They're taking the gas out of the ground, fossil methane gas, and by a process called cracking, they crack the molecule and they make polyethylene. They make plastics. That obviously, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners agree that that's just crazy and are well aware that we can do this with hemp, that instead of sacrificing for forests and farmland for pipelines and wells and drilling wells, and we could be growing hemp, storing carbon that way, because, you know, hemp is even better than forests, I think, acre for acre, as far as pulling carbon out of the atmosphere. Right. And, you know, take the seed and use the oil from that to do whatever you want, you know?
Yeah, well, it's also a food source, fiber. Yeah, well, that's really cool. I'm glad to hear that all that is potentially included. And then I also see something that is super important, but not addressed as much. And it's that activist mental health focus, sustainability in the movement, grief, release, and memorial service. So that sounds really great. Addressing the human component of, you know, pushing against things. It can be isolating. It can be sometimes depressing. We can burn out. So taking care of ourselves in that way.
Yeah. And this is the Memorial Day weekend. You know, we want to make time, hold space, I think is the term, to remember our dead, people who've passed, just natural or otherwise. Remember species that have been lost. You know, take a minute to really, I mean, my goodness, you know, we have an entire generation growing up in absolute despair that the life support systems of this planet are collapsing. You know, that is just a really unfamiliar kind of grief. And
yeah, no, that's the big one. And so it seems like, yeah, Heartwood Forest Council across the board, it's got all the pieces there. I'm excited about it. Eco Integrity Alliance is psyched to be a sponsor of Heartwood Forest Council. So folks should get their butts out there. Memorial Day weekend, May 24th to 27th. If you're on the West Coast, you should still go over there. But if you don't want to, there's actually going to be something likely happening in California on the same weekend-ish. So wherever you are, there's something going on, but definitely go to Hartwood Forest Castle. They've been doing, this is the 32nd annual. So they know what they're doing. Matt knows what he's talking about. Matt, you got anything else you want to tell the listeners?
Well, I did want to mention that in addition to all that, we're going to have a really fantastic youth program. One of the partners is called Rising Appalachian Warriors, RAW, and they run basically a summer camp for kids in Athens County. Athens is a very conscious community. You know, a lot of young entrepreneurs, back to the land, homesteaders, many, many cooperative land endeavors that have been around since the 70s, you know, the original hippie counterculture, you know, back to the land communes. And so they have, of course, that is going to play a lot into this particular gathering, but that also means that there is going to be a lot of kids there and a lot of really sensitive and aware youths. And we are very excited to provide, you know, we always have some sort of way to at least let the parents, you know, participate in the workshops without the distraction of, you know, and give the kids something that is rewarding and educational for them. This year, we can really take that a step higher. So that's a very important part. And it's all going to culminate on Monday with some sort of action. And part of the fun will be coming up with what that expression actually is. But, you know, Hartwood, if we can get 100 or 150 people together, plus 50 or 60 kids, we could really crash somebody's Memorial Day party or what have you.
Awesome.
So it's going to be a great weekend. Yeah, I'm really glad to have the chance to talk about it.
Well, folks, check it out, heartwood.org. Matt, thank you so much for coming on the Green Roo Podcast.
A pleasure, Josh. Thank you very much.